Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Hello and welcome to This Month in Assistive Technology for October. I am joined by three very able guests. My first guest is Wade Wingler, and he is with the Easter Seals Tech and the Indata Tech Projects. Hello, Wade, and welcome.
Hi, Lisa. How are you? Glad to be here.
Great. Good to have you. And next, we have a voice that is becoming more and more familiar to more of you, and that is Jamie Pauls of the Serotalk podcast. Welcome, Jamie.
Hey, Lisa. It's good to be with you this evening.
Thank you. And last but not least, we have Jeff Bishop, and he is one of the hosts of the Triple Click Home podcast, which will air on the Serotalk podcast network. Hi, Jeff.
Good evening,
welcome.
Lisa.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
This week, we're giving you a sneak peek at the upcoming version of Accessible Event. So please feel free to both explore and to look for more news about it coming soon. Here are some of the top stories for the month of October. And we start with one, and I'll be very interested to hear all of your thoughts on this. This is a story about the 7 tech breakthroughs that empower people with disabilities. Wade, I'm thinking with your capacity with Easter Seals, you might be a good one to start us out on this.
Well, yeah, you know, I was very fascinated when I took a look at this story. The first thing that's mentioned there is the Dynavox IMAX system, which is actually kind of a cool thing. It incorporates eye tracking, so the system actually looks at your eye movement and can tell where a person who is using the system is looking. And this is usually used by somebody who's nonverbal, and they can look at words and phrases, and little kiddos can look at pictures of things that they're interested in and get all kinds of spoken words. So it's a really great system in the world of augmentative communication. I thought that was great to have on the list.
Other thoughts?
Well, I guess my thought as I was looking at the article is that each one of us could probably write an article of the 7, you know, breakthroughs that are the most important, and they would all prevent. There are so many things that could be on a list like that.
I think it's really interesting that someone took an approach quite like that, because you really could take every disability and write, you know, a top 10 of breakthroughs that have ever happened. And I think, you know, that would prove to be very interesting to hear, you know, all about the different genres of, you know, tools and you know, technology that have been developed over time.
Yes, and I noticed particularly there were a few links related to visual impairment, and we actually had more coverage than any other disability, which was kind of telling it to me. It went back to that whole thing about people fear blindness more than many things. But basically what the writers felt were the important advances for blind people basically had to do with travel, with driving, and with navigation. And I know personally I would have liked to have seen fewer actual brands included and more generalized concepts.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I also noticed that, you know, there wasn't a lot to talk about mobile technology or even the cloud or some of the other, you know, major, maybe mainstream things that really do impact the field of assistive technology as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's certainly not a new innovation, but one of the mainstays in the field of blindness is Braille. And we have an article about the dumbest reasons for not teaching Braille. And when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, we've got to cover this. Anybody have any thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it's so important. I think Braille is so important that regardless of what reasons are listed, I mean, there are no good excuses. probably, I mean, I have mentioned on the podcast, I'm working with a friend who is taking Braille. She's wanting to become a teacher for the visually impaired. And the Braille code is rather daunting and in some ways a little bit inconsistent in, you know, as far as grade two Braille goes and why certain contractions are used the way they are. So I don't think it's the easiest thing for people to learn, but there are many, many resources out there. And, you know, regardless of the challenges, I think it's something that schools must do for blind children.
Well, statistics Absolutely. Have shown that those people who are Braille readers are working. And, yes. you know, I think that's the important thing to emphasize here, that if you're a Braille reader, there's a much higher percentage that you're working and that you are employed. And I'll play devil's advocate with you here. I think there's a lot of challenge for sighted kids to learn to read as well. I mean, you have, you know, they have to learn a lot of different things in reference to print and then cursive. You know, everything is not written necessarily the same, so it's challenging for them too. And I think we need to be really careful about representing Braille in a, not that we do it, but I mean, in general, the world needs to be careful about representing Braille in a negative light. It already has very negative connotations in education right now, unfortunately, and that needs to change. That's very scary.
Well, you know, I think we need more examples of people who will talk about that. I had the chance to chat with Chris Kaczynski, who's a pretty well-known attorney in the field of the ADA and disability rights. And he's one of the folks we were really talking about technology, but he stopped me to say, and you know, I know this isn't a technology thing, but I want to talk about how important it was that I was taught Braille at an early age and what that's meant to him as a professional and for, you know, from an academic standpoint. So I think, you know, role models who will stand up and say, hey, it's important. I think that's an important thing to do.
And, you know, even though Braille isn't a technology per se, really, what is more wrapped up in technology for blind people than Braille? If we don't learn to spell, we don't always learn to speak. Now, I know that sounds far-fetched, but I'll give you an example. I went to a website that was designed by a blind person, and they talked about becoming... What they meant was gainfully employed. But what they had written was game, like a game of chess, game space fully employed. And my thought was, wow, if this person read Braille, that never would have happened.
I don't know if that's specifically a blindness issue though, Lisa. I mean, I think that's
true.
I think that's just a literacy issue where if people are not taught to read and listen, I may say something really controversial here, but listening to an audiobook is not reading. I mean, you may think that it is, but it's not. I mean, you're listening to someone read to you. I mean, that's what we did in elementary school. We went to the library and had the librarian read to us. The same difference. You know, there's a big, big difference between listening to someone read to you and you reading. You know, and that's a very significant... you know, issue. And whether you're blind or deaf or just, you know, a normal person out there, if you're not able to read, there's you have very significant challenges in life, and it's very, very difficult.
I agree, and I actually think Braille is becoming more and more a part of technology, especially if we really do start to see the cost of Braille displays come down, and I think that's inevitable. I think it's going to happen. I think it's already starting to some extent, but as that happens, I think you're going to more and more see Braille being a part of technology.
You know, yes, what really scares me is that if we have a situation where Braille is not being taught and blind people are not reading Braille, what's going to stop people from saying, well, do we really need Braille signage? I mean, if we're not teaching blind children to read Braille, what's the point? And that scares me. That really, really scares me, because now, because of the education system not teaching our children, we're going to remove barriers to access. Very frightening.
You know, speaking of barriers to access, and man, I would love, we could just discuss Braille all night and its implications of literacy. But speaking of barriers to access, I never thought that one person could be such a barrier. But there is an article that we link to, and it says, accessible taxis would lead to injuries and lawsuits, the mayor says. This,
oh boy.
I don't know, this, forget double take, this made me just kind of hold my head and think, you know, what are we coming to? Where are we? Basically, he was, the mayor, Bloomberg, was saying that there was going to be a bigger gap between the passenger seat and the driver if a taxi was made wheelchair accessible, and that, you know, people could injure themselves and could sue.
Well, the last line of that article is the one that just made me gasp, and that's where he said, you know, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but basically chair users think that they need, you know, accessible taxis, but that's not necessarily what they really need, you know, for all of them to be accessible. I mean, it's like the arrogance of that, the insensitivity of that just is mind-boggling, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to come a day when he gets older and he's in a wheelchair and he needs to get somewhere.
And well, and it's obvious.
I would love to give him a ride myself in a taxi.
I'll give him a ride.
But
this is obviously a situation where Mayor Bloomberg just isn't aware and hasn't been educated about what's out there. I mean, this is a really great example for somebody to talk to him about the concept of universal design and the fact that, you know, you go to a superstore, the doors open automatically. That may be for wheelchairs, but it really does help shopping carts and, you know, curb cuts and the classic examples of making things work for everybody. And I think if somebody were to sit down and point out to him that, you know, there are a lot of things that are out there in terms of universal design that are really useful, he might be able to wake up and understand a little bit more. But I agree, this was fairly insensitive to say. And the quote was, oh no, everything has to be handicap accessible or wheelchair accessible, but that's not necessarily what the people that are in wheelchairs need, which, you know, really, I think, says a lot about where he is right now.
You know, it's easy to get, well, I'll speak for myself, it's easy for me to get very impassioned about this stuff and say, you know, and I really am not a political person, so this is not about that at all. But, you know, where is his head? This is common sense stuff. Put yourself in the other person's shoes. But, Wade, you make a very good point, and that is that I'm guessing that he's a very bottom-line type person, and that sometimes when enthusiasm or insistence won't do the job, sometimes using universal design and saying, here are the facts, it would make a big difference. I found that it was one of the, you mentioned the last line in the article, Jamie, and I noticed something at the beginning, and it said just 232 of the city's 13,237 cabs accommodate wheelchairs.
Yeah, and think about calling for a ride. I mean, think of if that is the only solution, which apparently it is, think of the odds of getting a taxi when you really need one with that few being available, being in a city that size.
Yeah, especially.
And this really is a serious problem.
Especially with New York being the size that it is. It's not like there's just going to be one right around the corner, and to make things more difficult, from what I understand, New York City is not really a car-friendly place, so it's not really feasible for people who live in the city itself to have cars.
Right.
Well, moving on to much happier news for many, Social Security recipients in the U.S. will get a raise in January. This is the first increase in benefits since 2009.
That's good. That will help a lot of people.
I think so.
Yeah.
And hopefully when people have more money to spend, it will do good things for our economy and put more back into our economy.
Agreed.
And On even happier news, we're all very proud of our Serotech CEO, Mike Calvo. He has just released a new book called Cloudy with a Chance of Profits. And, you know, I loved this book because it's a rare instruction or philosophy-based book that can be all things to at least most people. And I think Mike really does a good job of this. He kind of picks you up wherever you are and takes you along to his, position where he is at present. Any thoughts, any comments about this book?
Well, I know Jamie interviewed Mike on Serotalk.
Yes.
About the book. So if you guys want to hear a lot more about it, yeah, then you can go over there. What episode was that, Jamie?
That was 84.
Okay, good.
And if you want to hear even more about it, you can check out the book itself. It is currently on Amazon, and it is also on the on Apple. So you can get it if you have an iPhone, an iPod Touch, or an iPad. You can get it and read it with iBooks. It's not a large book.
You know, it's not a large book. It's actually, it would be 43 print pages. The thing that surprised me when I first read the book was in my mind when I found out that Mike, or when I saw that Mike was, had written a book and it was about to be released, you know, I thought, oh, wow, Mike's life story. And it's not that at all. It's not that at all. And in fact, I asked him if that might be possibly coming, and you can check out his answer if you go check out the podcast. But no, I agree with Lisa. Although it's a short read, it's packed full of a lot of information, and it starts simple, but it gets kind of advanced, and there's a little bit in there for everyone, I think.
And it's not, I wouldn't call it a fluffy book. I mean, I read a novel, for example, and I read it through and I'm done, but I can really picture myself looking back at this. Now, Mike said that he felt that this news was relevant for now and might not be for too terribly far in the future, but I think it will be very interesting to hold on to the book and even look at it 5 years down the road and see, just compare.
Yeah, I think even two. Yeah, I think even really 2 or 3 years, you'll notice. You know, you'll be able to say, wow, he nailed that one, or gosh, that went a whole different direction than Mike thought it would at the time.
Speaking of things that are going down in flames and are not turning out quite as expected, let's talk about the Amazon Kindle Fire.
Talk about going up in flames.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of sad to me. I mean, Mike actually talked about the fact that in many respects, Amazon has a great customer service record, and there's a lot of good things going for them, and why they're not running with the ball when it comes to accessibility, I don't know. I don't understand. It may be one of those bottom line things we were talking about a minute ago, and not really understanding the community that's out here that, that can really benefit Amazon as well as be benefited by Amazon. I think people are doing a great job of very aggressively but yet very creatively making people known, or making the problem known, rather, to people that these latest Kindle products are not accessible. I've heard of people on talk shows, radio talk shows, and news articles, magazine articles, that sort of thing. I think all those approaches are being taken.
I think we're in a time where this is just a really, really interesting and bad decision on behalf of Amazon. I'd like to know what the conversations in the boardroom sound like when they say, no, we're going to take a step back from accessibility right now, in a day when Apple and many others are, making huge progress and leaps and bounds in the face of aging baby boomers and increased special education dollars, when things are, needing to be more accessible. I mean, there has to be a dollars and cents reason that they would really just turn away and say they're going to step backwards. It just kind of blows my mind that any business would do that, you know, in the current situation.
This kind of takes us back to the Braille issue. Go ahead, Jeff. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think this even goes back even further to just a major problem at Amazon, even on their iOS, you know, app software itself. I mean, why can't you at least make your Kindle books accessible on an iDevice? When you have the software, it would seem that you could do that. And it's not like these are imaged scans of books. You really truly have the text available in them. And so there's really not an excuse here. And it's really a slap in the face to those of us who try to advocate, you know, for them to move forward, for them to basically just say no. And it's quite unfortunate. And the doors of that could be opened as far as education. Look, they now will do rentals if you're an Amazon Prime member. You know, there's just so many great things that could be opened up to the disability community if they would just do the right thing.
This really brings us full circle back to the Braille issue as it relates to long-term versus short-term benefits. I mean, they have not only excluded their blind customers, they have excluded their dyslexic customers, some of their older customers. They've also excluded their customers who might have chosen to use the product while commuting. I really think that this was really them shooting themselves in the foot. And we also had ACB weighing in on this whole issue. And I think the more organizations and individuals that we have, I think the more we can affect change. I think it's really good for large organizations to get involved and for individuals as well. I think together we can collaborate to make a difference. And speaking of those things which are accessible, JAWS 13 has been officially released. Any thoughts on JAWS 13?
Yeah, there's a really interesting feature that was added in 13. I'm surprised they called it 13, you know, the whole 13 thing. Never a good thing to call your software version 13. It will be interesting to see if Mozilla in the next 3 months calls Firefox 13, because, you know, they keep releasing new versions of Firefox like they're, you know, going out of style every day or something. But anyway, they have introduced a new feature called FSOCR. And what this is it allows you to take a picture of the screen that it would not be necessarily accessible to you, and it will OCR the screen and then allow you to then read that. And you can even go further and actually click on items in the text itself. So this would allow you to do things like access DVDs, software applications that present graphical user interfaces that are bitmapped or something like that. So quite innovative, actually. I'm really happy that they came out with that. It uses a version of OmniPage, it looks like to me, from looking at the... as it installs, you can kind of see what it's installing. It's kind of interesting. And so, yeah, there's quite a bit new in the release as far as fixes as well. And there's some other enhancements as well. So definitely go over to freedomscientific.com and check that out.
And if you need training for using JAWS, the textbook from Kathy and Maritha, An Immersion into JAWS for Windows 12 textbook is now available. And along that same line, Kathy Ann has Windows textbooks on her site. You can see the link in our notes. And they are also free to download. And she covers JAWS with Windows 7 and WindowEyes with Windows 7. Any thoughts? Anybody used any of those?
I've downloaded both of them. I haven't played with them yet. I have seen some of her other work, Microsoft Office 2003. When I purchased that several years ago, I went ahead and purchased one of her books. She does great work. I mean, she's about as thorough as it gets, and very comprehensive, and offers her books in multiple formats, in audio, text, and I'm not sure what else might be in that zip archive there.
Yeah, I know there's some sort of, I think, a Word file. I forget what
I was thinking Word. I wasn't sure.
Several formats. And, you know, for those of you who say, well, I use System Access, and we're certainly glad you do, or I use Dolphin Guide, or I use NVDA, you know, I would still encourage you, and I'd be interested in thoughts from our guests on this issue, I would still encourage you to get the textbooks and look at them or listen to them, because you can gain a better overall knowledge of how Windows works and how the various screen readers interact with Windows. I'm hearing more and more people saying that they have more than one screen reader on their system because some handle certain tasks better than others and vice versa. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that a lot of folks...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say that she does a great job of separating Windows commands, I think, from screen reader commands as well. Mm-hmm. You'll know which is which.
I was going to say that from my perspective, nobody can live with just one screen reader to do everything that they need to do. And I know that in our situation in Indiana, a lot of times folks on our staff are providing training on screen readers and things like that. But having access to quality text either before or after the training for reference is real important because, frankly, you forget stuff, you know, and you need to have those references, and to have those available, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. And if you are looking for another screen reader to add to your collection, NVDA has a new version out, just released. And there are also, again, you can see the links in our notes, there are 5 podcasts about setting up and using the NVDA screen reader. So that's really excellent. I know that I've learned an awful lot from the knowledge that is shared by other people in podcasts. The Nokia screen reader, we find, is based on Code Factory technology. Are any of you using this?
I don't think we have any Nokia users.
Long silence.
I don't think we do.
No,
either.
I mean, I'm, you know, but I mean, there are a lot of people that are still, and I'm glad that they're doing it, that they're offering that.
Exactly. The thing that
option is good. I mean,
yeah.
We should have as many options out there as possible.
Yep, and the fact that they're working together is excellent. And mobile accessibility is also working on support for Ice Cream Sandwich for Android. I personally don't use an Android device, so when I hear that, all that happens is I get hungry. But again, it's very exciting. It's another platform. So the more that we can really, if the more places that are using accessibility, hopefully the more people will see it and the more mainstream and the more normal that will become.
Even if you're an Apple fan and use an iPhone or other iDevice, you really should be applauding Code Factory's efforts and really hoping that Google pushes the envelope here, because if they keep innovating, then that is going to force Apple to keep innovating too, and that's really important, and we need everybody to have accessibility, whatever the platform, including Windows Mobile 7.
Agreed.
And if Android is a particular interest of yours, you won't want to miss that Android show on the Saratalk Podcast Network. Stay tuned for that. They're doing a lot of really good work. We have another app that's gained some notoriety. It says, BrailleType helps visually impaired to type in Braille on Android phones. And I believe, although we're straying into November, I believe that this is also available on the iPhone. Anybody played with this?
Yeah, I haven't played with it yet, but there's been quite a bit of talk about it, at least on the iOS side of things, and I'm not sure. You probably would need to check with the Android folks to find out more about it on that platform. But I think it's really intriguing that there's an interface quite like this. And I know that people have mentioned that there's some issues with, you know, how the data entry is actually done, and people are making suggestions for enhancements already. So I think this is going to be one of those apps that, at least for me personally, I'm going to wait and see approach and see where it evolves to. At least on iOS, you cannot do it system-wide. So it has not as much value as it might have, say, on Android, where, you know, they may be able to hook and actually replace the actual on-screen keyboard with, you know, this Braille entry type input. And that might be really, really significant for those Android users.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, I just don't have a lot of more information than that. Sorry.
No, I think it's pretty new, and it's still somewhat experimental, and I'm sure that we'll be covering more developments on that front in future episodes. You know, we couldn't possibly talk about the news and technology for October without talking about Steve Jobs. Now, I'm guessing that there are two camps out there. And one is saying, "Aw, that's so sad." And the other is saying, "If they talk about this anymore, I'm going to lose my cool." Well, I'm not really personally a big, I don't know, I'm not into putting, you know, I'm not a fan per se of quote, famous people simply because they're famous. But one thing that I really loved and thought it was very good was a speech that he made, How to Live Before You Die. And that was a talk he gave at Stanford in 2005. Did any of you hear this?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very powerful. Especially if you, I know this is, we're going to talk about this in a minute, but we might want to just meld these two together, that being the biography about Steve. If you listen to that speech that he gave, and then you read the book, you really have a lot of insight into what really made Steve up. I think it's going to be a long time before we see a leader quite like this ever again. And he was human. I mean, he lived on a street just like you and I might live, you know, with kids all around. And, you know, he would have people over for trick-or-treating, and they would have them come in the backyard. And, you know, just he was just a normal human being and complete with flaws and all kinds of interesting, you know, issues that he had. But I'll tell you, you know, I don't know if he was absolutely 100% directly responsible for accessibility that we have now, but even if he was involved at 80 or 50%, then he deserves a tremendous amount of credit for really changing the lives of those of us who are using iDevices. I mean, truly has been a transformation for many of us.
Well, and I think that he really has revolutionized the world of technology. The thing that I took away from the Stanford speech that I thought was really interesting was that he said the three most important things that happened to him in his life at that point was, first, dropping out of college, which gave him time to explore the things, take a calligraphy class, which was related to the fonts that we have today. He said the second most important thing was getting fired from Apple the first time and kind of having to take his lumps that way and learn from those mistakes. And then the third most important thing that happened to him was being diagnosed with cancer, and I think facing his mortality. And I know that in my career and in my life, it's been important. Those big things that seemed like a punch in the gut and failures at the time really were landmark events in my life. And I really took that away from his speech and thought that was important and impressive.
Absolutely. And the timing was very apt, although of course they did not, could not have planned for such a thing, but the other must discuss story for October was the release of the iPhone 4S and iOS 5. And again, you can link to this from our notes. The guide, the user guide for iOS 5 is available from the iBookstore. And we have lots of links or lots of information in a link, my apologies, about new features related to VoiceOver in iOS 5. Anyone have a favorite VoiceOver, new VoiceOver feature?
Wow, there's just so many. I mean, they've just really tweaked, enhanced the whole process of using, you know, iOS 5 from an accessibility standpoint. I mean, and it's kind of hard to separate VoiceOver features from the actual features with, you know, like notifications and the things that are just built in, which is, I mean, is the way it should be, I guess. But, you know, so many just little things that you just hear, and I can't even think of an example at the moment.
Oh, I have a good example, and it's one that I use, actually. And it's not one of the, you know, top features that you hear a lot about, you know, like the notification center and over-the-air updates and all of these type of things. My favorite feature in iOS 5, and you're going to think this is crazy, but my favorite feature is custom vibration alerts.
That makes sense.
I love it. I absolutely love it, where you can tap out a specific vibration pattern per contact in your phone. So especially if you're a ham radio operator and you know Morse code, well, there you go. So, you know, for example, my wife's name is Carrie, K-E-R-I. So when she calls and I have my phone on mute, say I'm in a meeting, then in my pocket is sent K-E-R-I in Morse code, and I know it's her, so I'll call her when I get out. Great stuff. Love it.
I like the ability to advance pages instead of having to do just the three-finger swipe, you know, just to be able to adjust the pages with an up and down swipe. I think that's kind of cool.
And you know, from my world over at Easter Seals, there are things in addition to VoiceOver that are pretty interesting. The assistive touch features, I think, are pretty cool. For folks who don't have the ability to shake to undo or press the physical home button or use the volume up, volume down buttons, there are now software equivalent to those kind of things. So there's a whole lot going on in terms of accessibility with iOS 5 that really makes me happy.
I just wish that those features for assistive touch were available along with VoiceOver, because there are people who are blind who have, you know, issues with their hands, and it really could help them in the use of their iPhone. So it is sort of unfortunate that those two features cannot be enabled at the same time and have those gestures work.
And I would agree. And the same is true with Zoom and VoiceOver. Those need to work together as well.
Well, we also have a link, and you knew it was coming because it's been the talk of the tech town, and that is Siri. And we have a link for 10 ways that people are really using Siri. And let's just briefly go around, and if you're using Siri, maybe tell us what your favorite application, what your favorite way to use it is. And if you're not, maybe some thoughts as well.
Well, I don't have Siri yet, but my wife does. And so my favorite thing is to borrow my wife's phone and use it for all kinds of things. But I kind of have fun chit-chatting with Siri. In addition to asking for directions and things, you can say some funny things and have some interesting conversation back and forth with it. If you compliment it, it'll say thank you for those compliments and things like that. It's kind of a hoot.
I use Siri every morning to check my calendar.
Excellent. There was a YouTube video the other day where they had Siri and Furby battling it out. That was a little bizarre. Apple TV. I keep wanting to say ITV just because so much is I, but Apple TV software 4.4 includes voiceover enhancement.
Yes.
Does anybody have Apple TV?
Yep, I do. And the enhancement here is that if you are starting up an Apple TV for the first time, it will prompt you if you would like to turn on voiceover. And all you need to do is click the lower right-hand button on the controller 3 times, and then it will actually enable itself. Many thought that you could do that at any time, but it's only during this initial phase of the Apple TV setup process. So there's also...
You know, Jeff, I'm glad you mentioned that part. I was trying to triple-click on mine today and couldn't get it to work, and I'm really glad that you mentioned that because I thought I was doing something wrong.
Nope, no, you're not doing anything wrong. It's rather unfortunate that they limited it to that, because I could see a situation where, let's say your wife who doesn't need voiceover, I don't know if she does or not, but my wife doesn't need voiceover. you know, if she wants to use the Apple TV right now, she's got to go through the menus and go into accessibility and turn it off, or tolerate it as she, you know, types things in and does searches and all of that. So it would be nice if they actually made it so that it would be more global and you could just do it any time. That would be really neat.
And maybe hopefully they will. And just a reminder that with all the new innovations coming out, if there's a feature that you'd like to see, don't hesitate to drop the developers an email, because really every voice does count.
Accessibility at apple.com.
Absolutely. And our last news from Apple is that they have released Lion 10.7.2 with iCloud support. Any comments on this one? I'm still trying to keep my keys straight and figure out what's where on the MacBook Air, so I'm not even close.
Well, they also released iCloud Control Panel for Windows as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so basically this just completes the whole iOS 5 experience, so that you have, you know, iCloud on the Mac, on Windows, and on all your iDevices itself. So it's a pretty large update on Lion. And when you install it for the first time, if you don't have iCloud set up, the first time you boot into your Mac, it will prompt you to create an iCloud account. You can do it then, or you can do it later. Doesn't matter. But once you do that, then those things that are in the cloud, you'll be able to see on your Mac as well as on your iDevices. So it's good stuff. A couple of hints as we're talking iCloud here of things to be aware of that are seemingly getting some people. Remember that if you're performing an iCloud backup on your iDevice, remember that it is backing up all of the data of all of your apps. So this is especially true if you're using something like Downcast, which downloads podcasts. For example, I have 1.3 gig of podcasts right now in Downcast, and all of that, at least at the moment, is backed up to iCloud, and you only get 5 gig of space. So if you were in a situation like I was when the Audible app first came out during the month of October, it actually synced all of your Audible books to the cloud. They have since turned that off. But when I did an iCloud backup, I immediately ran out of space and got a nice little gentle email from Apple saying, "We would love you to buy more. Here's a link." So just keep that in mind, that if you're seeing that, you know, you're consuming all of your iCloud storage, there's a new feature in iOS 5. You can go into Settings, General, and Usage, and look at how much space each of your iOS applications is taking, both from the application code standpoint as well as the data usage on your device. Then, if you want, you can go in the iCloud settings and actually turn off the backup of that data on a per application basis. So just keep this in mind. That good way of conserving space in your iCloud backup storage.
You know, I'm really excited about all the stuff happening with iCloud, and I have to confess, I haven't got to use a lot of it yet, but am I the only one who is checking iTunes almost every day to see when the iTunes Music Match is going to be turned on? I'm terribly excited about that and wonder if I'm the only one.
Well, I have it already as part of the development program, but I have yet to actually really implement it because I'm waiting for them to keep things, you know, this is public knowledge, so it's not something I shouldn't be saying, but they keep wiping out developer libraries in iCloud, so I'm not really anxious to put all my music up there yet, but the concept is fantastic, and it really, you know, if I could have bought a 16-gig iPhone 4S, I would have, because really there's not a lot of need to have that much space for a lot of music if you can just pull it down in iCloud, and in my, you know, traveling around and stuff like that, it would work perfectly for me, so great stuff. It's going to be great when it's out. People are going to love it, I think.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Lots of good stuff. I'm the kind that checks iTunes just to see what's new. Is there something new? How's it going to look? How's it going to work? You know. But lots of very interesting things on the horizon, I think. I would like to thank all of you so much for coming and for bearing with us as we worked out some kinks. I'd like to give each of you an opportunity to make any closing remarks and provide us with your contact information if you would like. So being boring and going back to the old standby, let's just go in alphabetical order, I guess. So Jamie, do you want to start first?
Well, sure. It's been a pleasure to be here this evening and to visit with you, Lisa, and Jeff and Wade. Always look forward to hearing from our listeners over on the Saratalk Podcast Network. We've been getting a lot of feedback and loving that, actually. You can follow me personally. Twitter is probably a really good way to do it. Twitter.com/JamiePauls. That's J-A-M-I-E. P-A-U-L-S. I think we're living in really interesting times as far as technology goes, so I just say hang on for the ride.
Excellent. Jeff, how about you?
Yeah, this is Jeff, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Bishop, J-E-F-F-B-I-S-H-O-P, and make sure to follow the Triple Click Home Twitter account as well, T-R-I-P-L-E, click, C-L-I-C-K, home. And our first episode will be coming up on SPN very, very soon. Thank you for having me here tonight.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm remiss in not mentioning the Serotalk Twitter feed as well. Serotalk, Serotalk. Thanks, Jeff.
30 lashes with a hard thumb drive. Okay, Wade, how about you?
Lisa, thanks so much for having me tonight. You did a great job with the show. Folks can find us on Twitter at Indata Project. You can also check us out on the web at EasterSealsTech.com. Or if you go to your iBlink radio app and look under podcasts, you'll find my show, which is Assistive Technology Update, 30 minutes of news and AT stuff every Friday.
Excellent. And if you would like to follow me, Jamie gave our Saratalk feed, but if you wish to follow me personally, you can follow me on Twitter, and my username for some reason really messes with people's heads, which was not my plan, because I seem to be able to do that on accident, but it's just not part of the creative process for me. And my username is LISASALI. It's just the first eight letters of Lisa Salinger. LISASALI. Now, we're still getting back into our groove, sort of. Our plan is for this to be an every other week podcast. But since we had to delay last week's, we have another podcast coming up on Thursday, November 17th. Same time, same station. And this one is going to be called Deck the Dogs and the Canes Too. And we're going to talk about decorating your cane or your guide dog harness or your dog. And what's reasonable and how, if at all, does that change public perception, your safety? I'm really anxious to hear what our guests have to say about that subject. And if you have a dog or a cane, or you know someone who does, we hope you'll join us, and we look forward to it.
That brings a whole new definition of canine.
Absolutely. Actually, the reason I thought about canes, too, is with the holidays coming. Yeah, well, we kind of just tried to keep moving, but, you know, here we are.
I'm sorry. It was a rough pun.
Rough? Okay. Anyway.
Guess a candy canine, perhaps, would work.
Well, that was sort of the point. I heard of someone who wrapped their cane in wet and white. This is Elmo Fudd here. Red and white crepe paper or whatever for the holidays. So we have a little something for everyone. If you would like, you are welcome to join us and possibly Elmer Fudd on Tech Chat. That is available through Samnet. You'll need two things to join us. You'll need a microphone, and you'll need either a membership to System Access Mobile Network or a trial. If you haven't tried the service, you can get a free one-week demonstration by going to www.sa, like System Access, sa2go.com. That's www.satogo.com. Thank you for listening to this issue of Serospectives. To find out more about our other podcasts, please visit www.serotalk.com. Or tune in on the iBlink Radio app for Android and iPhone. This issue of Serospectives is brought to you by the Serotalk Podcast Network.